This episode of The Europeans exists thanks to you, our amazing listeners. Every bit of it was funded by your support. Thank you all so, so much. If you aren't donating yet, please consider supporting our independent journalism by heading to patreon.com/Europeans podcast. Hello and welcome back to The Europeans. My name is Dominic Kramer and today we've got another special episode of our mini-series in which we're looking at policies in a few key areas and asking, who does it best in Europe? We're making this series because, honestly, now feels like the moment for it. A lot of people are tuning out of politics and, frankly, who can blame them? It's not exactly the most hopeful or optimistic moment we're living through right now. Politics can easily feel like a power game between people in suits who live in a different world entirely from the rest of us. But that's obviously not the full picture. This series is all about uncovering policies in Europe that genuinely make life better. Policies that you might not even notice exist, but do really influence your day-to-day life. In last week's episode, we looked at housing, and cats found some places where things are being organised a bit better, but she also found some pretty big structural problems with how we look at the housing crisis. Go back and listen to that two-parter if you haven't heard it yet. I found it very eye-opening. In this episode, we're looking at childcare policy, something that's affected all of us at one point in our lives, either as parents or when we were children. I don't actually have kids myself. For a long time, I did think I would have kids in a kind of rainbow family setup, co-parenting with some friends, because the people around me who are doing that seem to have a really good time parenting that way. Go and make rainbow families, people. Anyway, my family plan is not on the cards anymore. But through that process I went through that lasted quite a long time with the people I was going to co-parent with, we did think a lot about how we would raise this child, how we would be parents together, and I was particularly worried about the childcare aspect. Because, for example, I've had colleagues who've stopped working as much because it was cheaper to not work than to get childcare. I've had friends who had to move to another part of the country because they couldn't afford their childcare. I don't know. Does that have to be the case?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, hi. Let me introduce you to, real quick, welcome to The Europeans, Maja Stepančić.
Hi, Dominic. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, really nice to have you here. And welcome also to Ursula Zalatay.
Hey, hey.
Maja and Ursula are two amazing journalists for Slovenian Public Radio who are also just really fun people. And they also happen to have kids.
Yes, I have two. Maja has one.
And normally you co-host a ridiculously popular parenting podcast, Šala za starše.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What does that translate as?
Joke for parents.
A joke for parents. Love it.
You will hear the intro.
Šala za starše.
Do you remember why you started it?
Yes, we do. Because when I became a mother for the first time, I had to Google everything.
Like everything. Like everything. How to breastfeed, breastfeeding positions, childcare, how to enroll your kid in kindergarten. Like everything. Like everything.
There are just so many questions when you're suddenly responsible for this new tiny human. And so we wanted to make a podcast that offers information that we didn't have.
Yeah, I felt the same as Ursula.
And I believe you've already done some start of an investigation into childcare across the world, right?
Of course. We looked at childcare policies in the USA, Iceland, Austria, Switzerland, and we were so surprised that they're so different. And, you know, when we got the email from Katie asking us to do the piece for childcare, in the European Union, we were so happy about that because we did that in the past for Shala za Starše. And we kind of felt that we were ready for this. We're ready to do it in English for the English-speaking audience. And so we really wanted to go a bit deeper and find out what really makes a good childcare policy. Like, what do these other countries have that we don't have? Or maybe the other way around, what we have and other European countries don't have.
Well, I'm so glad you guys found it intriguing and decided to join us. It's really a match made in heaven, or a match made by our fairy godmother, Katie Lee, usual co-host of this show.
Yeah, we're very happy she put us on this mission.
Yeah.
But you two have your regular jobs at Slovenian Public Radio and also a family, and you're making this quite complicated episode too. How are you managing it all?
One word, childcare.
Ah, of course, childcare. Speaking of childcare, where are your kids right now? Are they like with you and just being very well behaved?
No. Don't you hear the sound? It's so quiet
it's
right now.
Silence. They're in kindergarten, of course.
Thank God.
What would your life look like if kindergarten didn't exist?
Chaotic.
We wouldn't be making this podcast.
Mm. Yeah.
I guess you wouldn't work much at all, probably.
No.
You or your partners.
I would have to hire a nanny, so, or stay at home.
I don't know, rely on our parents.
Partners, income, yeah. If nothing else. And I think we would be just doing the domestic labor mm-hmm. all the time.
They take our kids for 8 hours so we can go to work and be financially independent, mm-hmm. which is so important. I'm super happy to have my own income. I'm super happy to not ask someone, would you like to give me, I don't know, 100 euros? Mm.
It's not just the financial part. I want to be a role model. I want to my kids to see me as a working mom.
I'm happy that you guys can have a career and be parents at the same time.
Thank you, kindergarten.
And yes, Dom, it affects even you, the childcare.
Does it? I mean, I haven't been to a creche in years. And why would I, frankly? It's filled with noise and germs and lots of two-year-olds.
It's screaming at you.
It's true, but it's still one of the first policies you met as a baby.
I don't think I was aware at the time that I was experiencing a policy, but you're absolutely right.
So we are here to find the best childcare policies in Europe. And when we started looking at childcare policy, we immediately had to ask, what do we mean by good? Is it about the duration of parental leave, the accessibility of the nurseries or kindergartens? Is it about the quality of services?
There's so much to it. And I guess when we try to nail down what's good in childcare, we should also probably talk about like who it's good for.
Exactly. It has to be good for all, for moms, children, dads, economy, and the state, everything. Under a good policy, parents can take care of the baby while on paid parental leave. And later, when the baby is old enough, they can enroll him in the kindergarten and return to work. And that's important, especially for moms. At the end of the day, they still do most of the care work and stay-at-home parenting.
Yep, even in 2025. We talked to a Croatian economist who specializes in the gender aspect of economy. Her name is Ana Maria Sikiric-Simčić.
I teach various accounting courses and one really interesting course, Economics of Gender. This course is a result of my scientific work that covers various topics of economics aspect of gender equality, such as gender response to budgeting and policies, glass ceiling, gender roles, care policies.
And she says it's very problematic if one parent takes care of everything. In straight relationships, in most cases, that's moms.
And it's not just about the work involved in actually looking after kids. It's the mental load of keeping a household functioning as well. Scheduling the doctor appointments, grocery lists, household chores, activities. And as Ursula said, in straight relationships, it's very often the women who do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I really feel for you parents, especially you mums.
So our expert, Ana Maria, she did a lot of research on labor and domestic work, and she's mostly focused on the domino effect that this uneven workload has in all aspects of life. It was interesting to me that she understood her research on a whole other level when she became a mom. It was a shock to her as well to see how it works in real life.
And these inequalities are especially emphasized in motherhood. Motherhood significantly increases unavoidable unpaid work.
Unavoidable unpaid work.
Yep, making sure that the soap dispenser is always full. Well, that's one of 1 million tasks at home.
Yeah, exactly. Ana Maria actually has a name for the disadvantages that women have because they choose to be moms and work. She calls that the motherhood penalty.
The motherhood penalty?
The motherhood penalty. Which means that companies see it as a disadvantage to hire young mothers. Because people see them as less competent and less committed to work.
Still, even though the gender roles are changing and we are more equal, still there is this motherhood penalty that, that we feel ourselves, me and Maya, because it's if it's not mom guilt that you produce yourself by yourself, there's a mother shame. Mm-hmm. When people ask you, for instance, I'm at work and my kid is not enrolled in kindergarten yet, and they ask
who's
taking care of the kid?
Oh, your husband is a nanny. No, he's not a nanny. He's a father.
The father of the child. Or for instance, if my partner went outside with a stroller, they would be, you let your partner rest a bit. No, I'm cleaning the dishes.
I'm just doing my part.
Or
I'm
it doesn't
father.
Matter.
It's like half 50-50.
Still, the society tends to think that women will take care of the household, of course. And if you're sick, it's quite common
that mother
takes the sick days because there's still the payment gap, there's still the glass ceiling, it's screaming obvious. So the one that is earning less is of course going to stay at home.
Oh wow, motherhood penalty. So what's the opposite of that? Is there a fatherhood reward?
Actually, you're quite close, Dominic. There is this counter phenomena when men become fathers, especially if they earn a lot, so in high earning positions, they get paid even more. And that's called the fatherhood premium.
That's awful.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Exactly, because culturally men are often expected to be the breadwinners. And their careers don't stop because they have a baby. So employers see them as more stable and committed workers. And ta-da! They get a raise.
Ugh.
So by financing and providing adequate full-time childcare arrangements for children under the age of 3, government can contribute to the gender equality in the labor market. Consequently, this will result in more gender-responsive public spending too.
If you can enroll your kid in state-provided childcare, that means less gender inequality. And without affordable childcare, someone has to fill in the gap by staying at home. And that means that someone is working less and earning less, or they might even be trying to do both. The labor of childcare and a job. So the risk of burnout is real.
And as you say, in heterosexual families anyway, that's almost always the mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you think about it, plays a big part in why so many fewer women get to become, I don't know, a CEO of a company or a prime minister, a president. And then in turn, we get so many policies that are written with only the men in mind.
Right. And it's so unfair. But, you know, there is a country in Europe where women have just had it. And they stood up to show us how big their role in society really is.
Ooh, where is this utopian society?
It's Iceland. So in 1975, literally 90% of the women went on strike for a whole day. None of the women showed up at their jobs, neither in their office nor at home. They refused to look after their children, work, they refused to clean, all of it. Dominic, we found this tape from that time in the documentary The Day Iceland Stood Still. Here it is.
The beds were not made, dishes not washed, the telephone system went dead, theaters did not open, most of the schools were closed.
Wow, it looks really powerful. They all look so happy. Well done, Icelandic women.
It's like a revolution.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall with all the panicking fathers.
And the male bosses too. Yeah, so they all went out to the streets and talked politics for a day. And it had a huge impact on women's emancipation in Iceland. There was a before and an after. In terms of policy, the people of Iceland have since worked their way to being the most gender equal country in the world when it comes to payment.
I always really like to hear about a protest that actually works. And of course, equal pay is great, but tell me about their childcare policy.
Yeah, equal pay there also reflects equal sharing of parental leave. Each parent gets 6 months, 80% paid. But that doesn't mean the system is perfect. We also talked to Mojca Dominikovic, a mother from Slovenia who lives in Iceland. And she told us that it's a little bit more difficult to get access to childcare.
Well, access to kindergarten is a tricky one because there's never enough spots or employees in any of the kindergartens around the country.
Mojca says since the country is so big, people live really far apart and it could be a long drive to the nearest kindergarten. So they also have to rely on nannies. And in Iceland, they are called
dagmamma, that are taking care of kids just in their own home. They are certified, they're kind of just like nannies, but it's super, super hard to get anyone like a spot there. It's even harder than getting into the kindergarten.
Okay, so aside from being a kind of feminist utopia, there is definitely room for improvement when it comes to childcare in Iceland.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're on their way to the top. The government is also investing in childcare a lot. And Mojca got a spot for her kids since they built a new center near where she lives. So it is nice.
He has been going now since September 1st and he can't wait in the morning. He's super excited. He's very happy. We're obviously lucky to have really good teachers and kindergarten very close to our house.
That's really good news for Mojca. I'm happy for her. But yeah, is Iceland one of the top contenders to win the title of best childcare in Europe?
Mm-hmm. It definitely is, because its parental leave system is pretty good, right? But we thought we could probably find something even better.
Okay, give me a hint.
Okay, it's a welfare state.
Everyone gets healthcare.
Work-life balance.
Evenings are reserved for family and friends.
Safety.
Women can walk alone at night.
Gender equality.
Men are putting the baby to bed and doing the dishes.
And parental leave up to 480 days.
Well, this sounds like it must be somewhere in Scandinavia. Is it Sweden?
That was easy, right?
Apparently, yeah.
So Sweden.
The land of endless forests, IKEA, cinnamon rolls, and ABBA, of course.
Mamma mia. And the land of pretty great childcare.
Yes, I heard that Sweden is one of the best countries to raise children. And yes, I think it's true.
This is Katarina Hofing, a mother of two from Göteborg, Sweden. Has a similar system to Iceland. The parental leave is split between parents. And while they're on leave, they receive around 80% of their salary.
Each parent gets 90 days and the remaining 300 days can be used freely. So 90 for the father, 90 for the mother, 300 split the way you want. You have in total 480 days. And Dominic, listen, there's a really cool feature.
Parental days are really valuable as you can save them for a long time until children are 12 years old, so you can combine them with your holidays.
Wait, what does that mean? They can take parental leave when their kids are like 11 years old?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, theoretically they use up their parental leave days over the course of 12 years, so they can take it when the kid is 11, and they can prolong their holidays, that kind of stuff.
That's pretty cool. And 90 days for each parent, that means that the second parent gets to spend a healthy chunk of time with their kid, right?
Exactly. And it's a use it or lose it system. So if the second parent doesn't take those 90 days, they just lose them. They vanish. And so that means that a lot of people really do take them. And culturally, it's totally normal for dads and second parents to really claim that time.
This sounds like a piece of policy that has really led to a cultural shift.
Right, it's cool, but...
Oh, there's always a but.
There's always a but. It's never perfect, right?
One interesting rule here in Sweden is that when you get a second child, can your older child only be in kindergarten 15 hours a week? So this is quite tough.
In some places in Sweden, it's more, but 15 hours is the minimum legal requirement, and a lot of parents really struggle.
It means that a lot of parents have to look after a toddler when they also have a newborn baby at home, which can be hard.
Just from my own experience, the baby is trying to sleep or trying to breastfeed, and the toddler is trying to climb...
Oh, God.
...on the kitchen table. And he's screaming, and the baby is also screaming, and the baby is trying to latch, and toddler is trying to demolish your apartment.
I'm just stressed right now when you're listening to you.
There are also amazing moments of bonding, but still, it can be really stressful. And Katarina says in Sweden, the real reason behind this rule to have two kids at home is not to bond, but to save the state's money.
Okay, but despite this critique, is Sweden number one?
Sweden is kind of the obvious choice for a lot of people. It's on a bunch of lists of best childcare in the world. It is heavily subsidized by the government through a combination of central government grants and tax revenue. But we weren't really ready to give it a trophy without looking a little bit further. I mean, call it a gut feeling. So we did some more digging, and you'll definitely be surprised at the end.
Oh, I can't wait. Where are you taking us next?
Well, we decided to look into a Western European country with the tradition of strong democracy and the strong smell of blue cheese.
Bonjour.
Hi, both of you. Bonjour.
Ça va?
Ça va?
Oh, Katie, I miss her.
Well, yeah. Even though she's not preparing this episode, we called her to tell us what were her feelings, thoughts when she first became a mother.
Just a bit of background. Katie was originally meant to be reporting this episode, but then got pregnant. Which kind of feels fitting. And Ursula and Maya very kindly decided to step into her shoes.
We are so happy for her, but we are so happy for us either. It's like, it's a win-win.
Did she tell you that she took a grand total of just 10 days off work after having her first kid?
She did. Something she wouldn't recommend to anyone.
Oh, I definitely went back to work too early. I mean, 100%. We were making this series Oatly.
Oat milk. Here at the Europeans, we've become a bit obsessed with the Swedish oat milk company, Oatly, a brand that promises to bring the planet back from the brink.
But is Oatly the great alternative that will save us? Which I remain very proud of, an award-winning podcast series, but it was brutal.
Coming from my own experience, you don't know, the first months are really exhausting, even if you have the full support from your partner, as Katie did.
So our baby, our firstborn child, had two full-time carers for the first 3 months of his life, which is a real luxury. And even with that, we were both working so hard and we were so tired all the time.
Oof, I can totally relate. You know, you love that child more than anything in the world. Your life is suddenly such a mess. You make a lot of sacrifices. You sacrifice your sleep, your body. You can't wash yourself. You can go to the bathroom when you want to. You're not the same person as before. And this is such a big change.
At the beginning, it felt like we had just taken a wrecking ball to our lives and done this huge, irreversible thing that, yeah, in many ways had, I'm going to be honest, at the time it felt like we had ruined, like purposefully ruined something that we really loved, like this pre-existing life.
You are sleep deprived. You have this new toxic, intrusive thoughts. What if something happens? Is the baby breathing? Is he hungry? It's really emotionally draining, and also the physical tiredness. It's huge.
Yeah, that really does sound exhausting.
It makes me feel exhausted just listening to it or thinking about it, because it is, but I don't know. When you get over this stuff, you somehow forget about all of this.
But we're happier now. You know, it's a different kind of happiness. Of course it is. And we're tired all the time. But I'm not sorry that we did it. Of course not. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it again.
She wouldn't be doing it again if it wasn't a different form of happiness. It really is nice to have a family. And this time, Katie is taking her maternity leave more seriously.
So that's why we're here. And this time, Katie is having a more standard French experience. Because most mothers in France go back to work when their baby is around 3 or 4 months old, and then send their babies to daycare, or as they call it in France, la crèche. And one good thing about the French system is that the costs are dependent on your income.
If you are a richer family, you will pay more for it. If you are a very low earning family, you'll pay like really very little. Mm-hmm. So it tends to stay in proportion with your income, which is also something that helps people go back to work.
We call that means tested, right? And I think that sounds very fair and good for society, actually. It should mean that parents on lower incomes, especially mums on lower incomes, shouldn't get forced to stay at home because childcare is too expensive. So they don't miss out on a chance to progress in their career whilst wealthier parents are back at work. I would hope that this is the case in other European countries too, like making the price of childcare dependent on your income.
Yes, we've got this adjustable system in a few places, like, for example, in Slovenia or Italy.
That's good to hear. So France has a relatively fair pricing system, but other than that, where does France sit on the scale from having really lousy childcare to really excellent childcare?
Good enough.
Good enough. It doesn't sound totally enthusiastic.
Yeah, because, you know, after maternity or parental leave ends, if you go back to work, you have to put your kids somewhere.
Preferably, you would send them to nursery or kindergarten. But in France, it's not that every kid has a spot. It's not guaranteed. There just aren't enough public daycare centers. So a lot of parents have to hire a nanny or a childminder, pay lots of money for a spot in a private crèche, or indeed stay at home.
And the paid maternity leave in France is really short compared to some other countries in the EU. That's okay for someone like Katie, who we hear is actually pretty excited to get back to work. But she says some French moms feel sad that they don't get to spend longer bonding with their babies. So all in all, the grade we give the French system is
good enough.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the paid parental leave in France is very long at all. The 10 days after Katie's first child were extreme, of course. But even 3 or 4 months sounds quite short to me. Babies are still so small and fragile at that age.
Yeah, they are. And that's why we wanted to find a place that has the longest parental leave in the European Union.
I actually know where this is. When Katie was doing the research about this topic, she told me she wanted to immediately book a flight to Romania because I believe they have up to 2 years of parental leave.
Right. Sounds great. On paper.
It was a challenge to return to work after 2 years.
This is Dana Thompson from Bucharest. She has a 5-year-old kid, so 6 years ago when she got pregnant, she was just starting her medical career, and she was overwhelmed, to say the least.
Because, you know, like, I'm going to miss a lot. I'm a doctor, and I was, like, still a junior doctor. I was preparing to become a doctor, but, you know, that's how things worked out. And now looking back, I don't actually regret staying the 2 years with the child at home, because I feel that it was so important to be there for him. It was more important than being back to work.
Dana says she doesn't regret staying at home for 2 years. And based on a UNICEF report, people should get somewhere between 6 and 12 months.
Why 6 months? What's that based on?
Well, this is enough time to heal after giving birth. It's long enough to at least reduce the risks of mental health issues. And it's enough time to bond with your baby. So it's based on the well-being of the mother and the child.
But why not give them like 9 months or a year or maybe 2, as in Romania? Isn't it just like the more, the better?
If you ask Dana, yes, she will probably agree with you. But if you ask a sociologist like Stephanie Scherer...
It's a sort of family policy, but it has in mind a very, let's say, traditional way of doing family, and it has some costs. So in a way, yes, it's generous, it's wonderful, but it has costs, yes. And we do have solid evidence that long leaves can, yeah, increase gender inequalities in the labor market.
Okay, the longer the maternity leave, the greater the motherhood penalty.
The motherhood penalty.
More missed opportunities for promotion while your male colleagues are getting ahead, that kind of thing. I mean, the logical solution would probably be just to split the parental leave more equally between the parents, like in Iceland or Sweden, no?
You're right, yeah. But of course, not everyone sees that as a good option, forcing both parents to spend the same amount of time at home. At the end, it is a family choice. And in most cases, fathers just transfer their days to the mother. And, you know, in Romania, people are paid like 85% of their salary during the leave, which it is still a pay cut. In some families, women return back to work sooner, and they're even financially encouraged to do so by the state. They get some sort of a financial bonus if they return back before the end of parental leave. And of course, there are people perfectly happy to do the full 2 years at home, like Dana did.
The employers are usually quite understanding, so it's mostly fine. At least in my line of work, I've had colleagues that had 6 children and had to postpone it 6 times. So, yeah.
So imagine, if you have 6 children and they're around 2 years apart from each other, and you want to take the full 2 years per child, that's 6 times 2. That means you're out of your job for 12 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah, which isn't great, probably, for moving forward in your career life.
But it's great if you're a family person.
It is.
You would like to stay.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have 6 kids.
Yeah, but I mean, how many people have 6 children?
Not a lot. Yeah.
Not a lot. It's more 1 than 6. Yeah. But Dana says that the system in Romania is supportive. The parental leave is generous and it's paid by social insurance. But there is a shortage of childcare centers to look after the kids once they're a little older. The state is building some new facilities, but right now the situation isn't that great.
We talked to some state kindergartens, obviously, but what we found there is that state kindergartens tend to be really overcrowded, and they do tend to mix kids of all ages. Yeah. Ages 2 to 5, they were together with one teacher, which was clearly overwhelmed. It was not the best option.
That's why Dana and her husband Richard decided on a private kindergarten. And they're lucky that they can afford a private one, but she says that public kindergartens are affordable for basically everyone.
Okay, so let me try to put this together because I've never had to think about it in this much detail. The quality of care that these kids get at nursery or kindergarten, that too plays into what makes a good childcare policy. And Romania is like semi-good when it comes to that, depending on who you ask, of course. And then this really long parental leave that seems great at first sight is actually a bit of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it could be great for family time and bonding, but it also means that each time the mom is taking a full 2 years out of work, and at that time, she's not getting promoted. That also means she's not paying as much into her pension.
So it seems pretty clear to me that Romania is not the winner.
OK, clearly. We were at a bit of a loss, so we thought to ourselves, what if we looked at the wrong things? Why not look at a country where the state was not so involved in childcare in the past, where childcare policy has relied a lot on people taking care of each other?
And so we thought of Italy.
Aha, la bella Italia. Okay, so you're looking at a childcare system which is based on the principle, it takes a village.
Exactly, it's a bit of cliché to think of Italy when you think of big families in Europe. And when I think of Italian families, there's always the center of the household, the nonna, and then there's a bunch of adult children and just a whole house of very loud grandchildren. Do you have that image in your head, Dominic? We can see it in a lot of Italian movies.
Yeah, I do have that image, partly because I'm a big fan of Sorrentino, the Italian filmmaker, and in his films there are always these multi-generational families together cooking and looking after each other. But can I guess that you're about to tell me this is not true? This is not how it actually is?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but this image of the big happy family at the table, Italians, of course, have a name for it. They call it La Famiglia Mulino Bianco. Mulino Bianco is actually a cookie brand, and everyone in Italy knows this commercial.
Ogni mattina svegliati con una buona abitudine.
Oh wow. Totally idyllic Italian life with wonderful coffee. Oh, there are those cookies you just mentioned. Father carrying two kids down the stairs. Beautiful mother. Oh, and there's the granddad at the table too. It looks very idyllic.
La prima colazione italiana. Il modo giusto per cominciare la giornata.
It looks like a fairy tale because that's what it is.
Mm.
There are parents without grandparents. Some of them are solo parenting. In Italy, around 10% of families are single parent families. And some of them found a solution that even has a name. Mommunes.
Mommunes as in like a commune for moms.
Yeah, you're right. Is a form of a community that works as a support system. Single mothers with children live with a friend to share the household expenses. It's an informal solution since Italian childcare policy hasn't really adapted to the family needs.
But even those who have grandparents can't necessarily rely on them anymore.
Non c'è più in Italia. Prima era così in Italia.
That's Carlotta Giordano. She's a kindergarten teacher I met in Rome. She says it's not the way it used to be in Italy. I met her at Asilo Nido, at the kindergarten. It's a small place on the first floor of the residential building. When I was looking for kindergartens in Rome, I saw a sign that said Asilo Nido, so I rang a bell.
Buongiorno, salve.
Carlotta invited me to the playroom where the one-year-olds were expecting pranzo, which is lunch. The smell was nice, you know, Italian food is always good and smells good. So as they were waiting for the meal, Carlotta and I started talking.
Adesso col fatto che anche,
she basically says that because the retirement age has been raised, many grandparents don't have time to take care of the grandkids. She explains nowadays, as a young parent, you can't really rely on grandparents like you used to in the past.
And without a family network, if you have one, if you're privileged enough to have one, without the support from grandparents or relatives, you realize just how important childcare policies are.
Carlotta is actually a mom of twins, and she says she had to return to work almost immediately after giving birth.
Tant'è che io in primis sono dovuta rientrare.
Not only that, she realized kids in the nursery are often sick, but you are not fully paid to take care of them at home. And this is most shocking for me.
Io ho preso una persona che mi ha aiutato a casa.
She, a kindergarten teacher, decided to hire a nanny because kindergarten was too risky for her as a working mom.
Wait, that is crazy. A kindergarten teacher hiring a nanny. What does she mean by too risky?
Too risky to catch all the kindergarten germs.
Urgent note, lice in our group.
Alert, alert, rotavirus season.
Chickenpox.
Unexplained fever.
Weird spots in my kid's mouth.
Eye and ear infection, because why not both?
It really sounds like a bizarre solution, but if you think of two kids getting sick all the time, you can understand why Carlotta made the decision to hire a nanny.
And some families are also forced to do so because their child can't get a spot in the kindergarten.
Yeah, I think this is a problem that's quite common, like across quite a few different parts of Europe. In France, like Katie said, but also in other countries like the UK where I grew up. Many of my friends and family who have kids there have also struggled to find nursery places for their kids.
Yes, and in Italy, there aren't enough centers for kids, especially under three. There just isn't enough governmental or private investments to keep them running.
Bambini qua in Italia passano un po' in secondo piano quando invece tutto secondo me.
So Carlotta, the twin mom kindergarten teacher, says children are in some ways really overlooked in Italy. It's crazy because, you know, everything depends on them.
I know we all have said it and heard it a billion times that children are our future, but this isn't just a platitude. Sure, they're the future guardians of the planet, but they're also future taxpayers and world leaders and kindergarten teachers. Now, the Italian government likes to talk about children and families a lot, but finally, they're maybe realizing they have to change their policies as well, and of course, invest some money in childcare. And actually, they're planning to invest a lot. 2.4 billion euros to build new nurseries.
Thank God they finally realized they have to do so. And as Carlotta says, the traditional Italian upbringing has definitely changed. Family isn't as involved in childcare as it was before, so parents have to rely more on the system that's provided by the government, a system that right now mostly fails its people.
Okay, so it sounds like the state-free libertarian route for childcare doesn't really work. Italy clearly doesn't do it best. Maya, Ursula, I'm wondering, is there a place where everything or almost everything actually works?
Well, there's no perfect system. But Dominic, you know, after these few months researching, we realized that there's no place like home.
Ah, cute. Slovenia.
Yay!
Aww. Yeah, well, I have to say, I remember that one of the first times we met, you mentioned that every kid in Slovenia has a guaranteed spot in kindergarten.
When you're pregnant, you know that your kid will have a spot because there's no worries here in Slovenia.
But is it just because you live in the big city? Like, is it, or is it like this across the whole country?
I'm coming from a very small village. And when I talk to my friends from there, they are saying the same stuff.
And not only that, you kind of get a 2-for-1 deal. I got it myself. The second kid gets to go for free if the firstborn is still in kindergarten. Something that is also important to mention, when a child gets sick, you can easily take time off work.
You just have to contact your kid's pediatrician and they approve your leave. It's as simple as that.
Another thing is, in Slovenia, mothers can stay at home for a year and ta-da! Parental leave is 100% paid by the state for self-employed moms as well.
Oh, that's great! A year fully paid. Well done, Slovenia. Sounds excellent.
Yes, 12 points for Slovenia.
And Slovenia, 12 points.
It really is exceptionally good. We only realized that just now, doing this episode. In most of the countries, you know, you get 80 to 90% of your salary. Here in Slovenia, it's fully paid.
So 105 days are reserved for the mother. The other 260 days can be split between parents equally. But most of the time, fathers or second parents transfer their 130 days to the mother.
Okay, so still to some extent reinforcing this idea of it being the mom who should stay at home.
Yeah, however, these second parents, mostly fathers, get another 60 days that are just reserved for them. And it's a similar system to that in Sweden, where you either use it or lose it. But still,
we have the best parental leave systems in the world, I would say.
This is Alenka Schwab. She's a sociologist who specializes in family policies. And she says that the Slovenian system is really progressive. For her, two really important factors that make it so good are the duration of parental leave and the fact that it is fully, so 100% paid.
We also have kindergarten system, which is well-developed, affordable, which also facilitates women's participation in labor market. And the most important thing, I think, is that children have equal access to healthcare and education, regardless the parents' social status.
That is all so nice to hear. And it actually, it reminds me of an article that a listener who actually supported this crowdfunding for this series sent us. It's in The Guardian. And let me just look it up. It's called "These Are Not Numbers, They Are People: What Ex-Communist Slovenia Can Teach the World About Child Poverty." And in it, it basically says that Slovenia has the lowest rates of child poverty in Europe.
Yes, it's true. Something we can brag about, but even though we're doing so great in terms of childcare in Slovenia, we're still not ranked on any top 10 list of countries with the best childcare policy, not in media articles and not in academic papers on childcare either.
That's so strange. Well, I mean, at least it looks like you might be heading up our list here. And of course, that's the most important thing.
Yay, small wins. I mean, being high on the list here at the Europeans is great, but it would also be nice to have some proper recognition by experts, no? Because as it turns out, the system that people use to compare childcare policies doesn't always take into account the complex history of countries. Here's Alenka again.
I would say maybe that the reason is that Slovenia is a sort of, I would say, special case. It was very progressive, even during the socialism. It was more oriented toward Western countries. It was more comparable to Western countries. And it is not quite like other ex-socialist countries.
During socialism, there was a strong network of public kindergartens here in Slovenia. And we also have the tradition of full-time female employment, something so important. Now, it's a little bit difficult to find data that compares how many moms in each country are in full-time employment. But if we crunch some of the numbers from Eurostat, it's pretty clear that Slovenia has by far one of the highest rates in Europe, more than 80%.
Wow.
I think this percentage of full-time employment is one of the best indicators for a good childcare policy.
Yeah. Okay. So as opposed to women going back to work part-time because they don't know where to park their kids.
Park our kids. But yeah, it kind of is that way. The fact that Sweden and Slovenia have this really high percentage of women in full-time jobs means that something in our policy is working really well.
And of course, there's always some room for improvement, but generally family policies here in Slovenia are made for all types of families.
That does sound really cool. And actually, I wanted to ask, did you look into different family models and how policy applies to them?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, because like you have single parents, foster families, multi-parent families, large families, adoptive families. A lot of this episode, we've been talking about the difference for the mother and the father. But like, what about queer family?
Yeah, we talked to Katarina Bugatai. She and her wife are parents to a three-year-old girl. She says the dilemma was how their daughter would call them, the mothers. And the most common name for a mother in Slovenia is mommy.
My wife's mommy and I am mammy. And if someone, for example, says to her, oh, you have two mommies, she's like, no, I have mammy and I have mommy. So she understands the difference and it's super cute. It's really nice. And I think it works perfectly.
Mommy and mammy, or as they're listed on the official birth certificate, as parent one and parent two.
There's a list of LGBTQ plus friendly centers, public ones where teachers are educated to be welcoming to all types of families. Katarina, or Katka, that's her nickname, she says that as a queer family, they never had any problems in Slovenian institutions.
No problem at all. We've had amazing experience. We've never felt anyone discriminating or treating us differently. Even in kindergarten, for example, when there was Mother's Day, we both get the gift. Like, it's really nice.
That is really lovely. I have to say, kindergartens in Slovenia sound pretty great. I don't think I'm going to have children myself, but maybe I would be more open to if childcare was organized here in the Netherlands as well as it is in Slovenia.
Feel free to move.
Dominic, you are always welcome here in Slovenia.
Okay, I'll talk to my husband about it later.
The major plus is the quality of the program. I was never concerned that my kid will be left out or if I had to choose, if I could have my parents to take care of him or the kindergarten.
You would choose.
I don't know if I wouldn't choose kindergarten over them because the curriculum is so good. They have this Ecological Friday,
green menu once a week. They eat like eco food
from the local
farmers.
I think they're in good hands. The staff is properly educated. The facilities are clean, spacious. It really is a hidden gem, I think.
They are taking our kids almost every day to play in the park, hide and seek, and like now my kid brings home every day some nuts.
I think also the culture here is changing quite a bit. I think we're the first generation where fathers are heavily involved in childcare. Gender roles are changing dramatically. And, you know, we used to laugh about it that our dads didn't know our shoe size, for instance, when we were kids. They didn't know the names of our kindergarten teachers. Nowadays, fathers here are really involved in the upbringing of a child. And even in politics, we talk about families a lot. There are some right-wing initiatives that are really crazy about how we have to protect our own kids and make more Slovenians and so on. But in the core, it is really high in the value system, Slovenian value system, to be involved in family life and to have that work-life balance here, that you have to spend your weekends, even you have to, with your family.
Well, it sounds like Slovenia is doing great in terms of childcare. Would you say that's your final answer? Slovenia wins, who does it best? Childcare policy edition?
It's a really, really close call. But looking at all the points, we think that Slovenia is the winner of the Who Does It Best trophy.
Congratulations, Slovenia. I think that's awesome.
I mean, sure, maybe Ursula and I are a tiny, tiny bit biased, but it's just so nice to come to the conclusion that we in Slovenia are doing really, really good in comparison to other countries in Europe.
I have to say, I'm kind of charmed by the fact that you two seem to be surprised that Slovenia has come out on top. How did this happen? I mean, you have a podcast about parenting in Slovenia. Did you not realize it was so bad everywhere else?
Honestly, I don't think we quite realized how good we had it until we truly compared ourselves. And then once we started looking, we saw that it's actually a huge percentage of kids here in Slovenia who are enrolled in kindergarten, which I guess it means that on average, Slovenian parents seem to trust the system.
So, yeah, I'm a bit worried that people are going to be suspicious that we're becoming like a podcast sponsored by the Slovenian government, because Katie's already waxed lyrical about Slovenia multiple times in the history of this show, saying it's the best country in the world and the most beautiful country and everyone should go and live there and go on holiday there. Mm. And now we're giving it best childcare as well. There must be some bad things.
But we didn't see that coming.
There must be some bad thing.
What is bad?
It's bad that still, even though the gender roles are changing and we are more equal, the fatherhood premium we talked about.
The fatherhood premium.
It's a real deal. Because you're in your prime years usually when you have your kids and when you're trying to get ahead of your career. And then the parent that stays at work, of course, is going to be promoted before the parent that is taking care of the kid.
Well, I guess I'm pleased to hear that everything's not absolutely perfect in Slovenia, but I'm really not pleased to hear that you have these patriarchal norms.
We have this small country problem that we like to compare ourselves
to the Nordic countries, basically. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side.
We always tend to compare our system to the Nordic countries, as Maya said. And at least once a year, a big camera crew flies to Iceland or Denmark and they film these empathy classes and their revolutionary approaches to childcare.
Revolutionary.
Yeah.
That's so funny because we also have empathy classes, but they're just not labeled as that. They just hug and talk and that's it.
Yeah. And they also have their free time. They spend their days outside, even if it's raining. It's not something that only Nordic countries do. So, yeah, don't appreciate what we have.
Well, I'm so glad you now both do. Thank you so much, Maya and Ursula, for taking us through this wild ride of Europe's childcare policies. I've had a great time learning a lot about something that I really didn't know about. And next week, we're going to be moving on to drugs policy, another thing I know absolutely nothing about. Wojciech Oleksiak, our producer in Warsaw, will be guiding us through that final installment of Who Does It Best?
This episode was written, reported and produced by us, Ursula Zaletel and Maja Stepančić, with additional production from Kats Laszlo.
If you speak Slovenian or want to learn, why don't you check out our own podcast, Šala za starše?
This episode was edited by Jasmine Baumi, Kats Laszlo, with editorial support from Dominic Kramer, Katie Lee and Morgan Childs.
The sound design was by Jesse Lou Lawson. Wojciech Oleksiak did the mastering.
The music and sound effects come from Epidemic Sound and freesound.org.
And our wonderful artwork is designed by Atika.
Thank you to all the amazing people who donated to the crowdfunder that made this episode possible. We couldn't be more grateful. If you're feeling inspired to support the Europeans' ongoing work, please go to patreon.com/Europeans Podcast.
And special thanks to everyone that talked to us for this episode. Mathieu Lefebvre,
Ana Maria Sikirić-Simčić,
Martina Pezer,
Petra Klasić,
Ivona Ivić-Lovrenović,
Mojca Dominiković,
Katarina Hofing,
Katie Lee,
Stephanie Scherer,
Dana Thompson,
Richard Thompson,
Madalina Ion,
Corina Parvu,
Alenka Švab,
Katarina Bogataj,
Carlotta Giordano,
Giulia Milan,
Letizia Mencarini,
Maria Rosaria Gualano,
Anne Vipke Peters,
Mojca Širok,
Tanja Zrzut,
Eva Čuk. And a final heartfelt thanks to the wonderful professionals who were looking after our children so that me and Maja could work on this episode.
Hvala.
Hvala in nasvidenje.